that you don't find, and that's a symptom. You just hide yourself away. Waving the head of traffic, jumping out a window, jumping out a window, jumping out a window. Jumping out a window, landing in a horror show.
We had really great highs and really terrible lies and bizarre, you know, like winding up in the High Court of Australia in the witness stand. You know, you join a band, do you think that's going to happen?
In 1979, Christchurch was crawling with bored, rebellious youth with rock and roll dreams. Like anywhere, really. But from those same streets came a band with the talent and determination to get out of town and make it onto the world stage. One of them was Richard Driver, then known as Dick Driver.
I was in a punk band called The Doomed. It was just a spirit of the time type venture. We played for about 9 months. It wasn't a serious thing at all at the time. I was racing motorcycles and I had a day job driving a truck for the City Council Waterworks. We were long-haired punks. Had a sort of a Jufro, which is a white man's afro, and I had a glitter top. It was sort of New York Dolls meets Johnny Rotten in some way.
At the end of the 70s, Christchurch was sometimes a dangerous place to stand out in the crowd.
I had a guy wave a knife at me in the square one night. I had blue hair, sort of semi-mohawk blue hair, and outside the Late Night Burger Bar, the famous Warner's Burger Bar in the square. I was sitting in my car and waiting for a cheese and egg burger, and someone in the crowd spotted me and went, "He's got blue hair! He's got blue hair!" Next minute, there's a knife waving in the window of the car, so...
The band, Splash Alley, got together by accident. Keyboard player Chris Moore literally bumped into songwriter and bass player Paul Scott. Paul Scott.
I met Chris Moore through a friend of mine, Mike Verstappen, at uni. Got invited to a party. It turned out to be his. We got a bit drunk. He ended up breaking my glasses completely by accident, which actually led us into a reasonably intense conversation that turned to music. And he said he knew some guys who were playing in a band called Even the Apples, and he wasn't very keen on Even the Apples, but he thought that the drummer was great and the guitarist was great. Probably the following weekend, we had our first rehearsal, Chris, myself, Kevin Emmett and Paul Mason. That was in a funeral parlour in Christchurch, not in the embalming room or anything, it was in the showroom where they had the coffins and stuff.
All right, all right, all right, all right. There's a mistress moving every town.
It was just immediately about twice as wide and about three times as high as any band I'd played in before. It was a huge sound. And we just immediately started rehearsing really intensely.
Pop Mechanics guitarist Paul Mason.
Like, this is my first band. I was desperate to get going. Kevin was desperate to get out of a boring residency he was in. I think Chris had recently come to Christchurch from Ashburton, and Paul is a born songwriter. If he was on a desert island, he'd be writing songs. He would do it if there was no crowd because it's in his blood, and he just needed to write songs. We got going pretty quickly.
Played a show without having a front man, just taking a turn singing amongst the four of us. Decided that we probably needed a front man, advertised, and Richard was the second guy to turn up, and he'd already had some experience, and he had a look and an attitude, and he was an incredibly nice guy as well.
This was Richard Driver, Dick Driver.
I rang the number and got a really cheerful guy on the end of the phone. It was Chris Moore. He came round to my flat in an Austin farm truck pickup and took me round to a flat in Park Avenue where I met Kevin Emmett, Paul Scott, Paul Mason. That was our first meeting, and we just talked for hours. Shot the breeze for a long time before we even picked up any instruments.
I think we were all like playing too loud. We couldn't really hear him. So we did like a bunch of songs. Then he left. We said, well, what do you think? And we basically all said that, well, I couldn't really hear him. So I don't really know what I think. But he was the brother of Steve Driver, who was a singer in this band, Shady Lady, who were a great rock band, covers band, in one of the local hotels. And he just kind of, he looked interesting. He was an interesting guy, and he had a great sense of humor. I don't know, he just gave off the right vibe. And, you know, I think we decided that we really didn't care whether or not he could sing at all. We decided we just wanted him in the band.
I don't remember an audition. I just think they said, yeah, well, you're fine. My memory's not too good. They just thought I was a bit of a catch, I think, you know, because of my little bit of a profile. I'd been on TV, you see. Neil Roberts from the Current Affairs program had come down and done a story on punk, so in a very short time I got a bit of a profile for not doing particularly much at all other than riding around and grimacing.
Is one for the possessive girlfriends.
So Splash Alley were on their way, playing their own songs as well as cover versions all around Christchurch.
What are you girls gonna tell your mothers? I don't wanna hear another word about your lovers. Hide your boyfriend in the covers. You've been to the doctor and you hope that she recovers. A white glove, don't burn. No uniforms keeping you up. I said, don't wanna be goody goody. Don't want just anyone. Don't give it everybody. You belong to me, you belong to me.
We just started gigging. I think it was like 3 weeks, 4 weeks after that, we just started playing and played as much as we possibly could. As Splash Alley, a mixture of covers and originals, I was always very interested in writing original songs, and they were into doing those songs, which was great.
I do remember saying to Paul Scott, because I think I recognised pretty early on that he was pretty exceptional lyricist and songwriter. I did remember saying to him, look, we have to play our own songs. It's the only way we're going to get out of here and do things.
You belong to me, you belong to me.
I remember Paul coming in one day saying that writing your own songs, doing original songs, was vitally important, and if the rest of us didn't want to do it, he would quit the band. And this was only after about the third rehearsal. And we all said, sure, yeah, we'll write our own songs. Sounds good. So that was that. Because there were a lot of covers bands around even then.
People just started coming, and we struck a chord somehow. And we were genuine. There was nothing pretentious about anything we did or anyone in the band. We just played from the heart, really, and just went for it.
We played a lot. We were playing, you know, 6, 8, 10 times a week, 2 gigs a night, you know, just whatever we could do, essentially.
People started ringing us and contacting us, and just kind of snowballed really quickly. I don't remember playing to empty rooms. I think we played the British Seamen's Hotel in Littleton, and it was full of mates, and two or three weeks later, you know, we played the Ducks Deluxe, and the fee was two flagons of apple juice.
We were sort of like, you know, ranging between 19 and maybe 22 years old, and we weren't really thinking about making money. The thing for us that was really important was that we actually were in a band and we were playing and people were actually coming along to see us. And that was like, bloody hell.
Most of us, to be honest, were supported by our girlfriends. I don't remember having a formal meeting, but the general feeling was that we should do this and devote ourselves to it. We went to Dunedin and played the Captain Cook Tavern a few times, and that was on the road for us. But eventually we did go to the North Island, and the first night we played Palmerston North, and there was two people, and we ended up going back to their place afterwards for a party. And it was always the hairdressers, you know, they were always the first people to check out a new band, and then the word would go out, you know.
I'm 18, I just don't know what to say.
The word on Splash Alley when they hit the Auckland music scene for the first time was good, bar two words. Splash Alley, the name, had to go. It was the first of several name changes for the band, and one that would prove to be fateful.
With the final name, almost, Pop Mechanics, yeah. We'd done our first tour, and that culminated in some shows at Main Street in Auckland, which we were very much looking forward to. We thought that was kind of the apex of what we could do at that time. Barry Jenkins, who was Dr. Rock, who was quite a celebrity amongst certainly people I was hanging out with because of his show and stuff, he was there, so we were, ooh, this is great. He actually liked us, but he hated the name. Yeah, but he said something to the effect of great band, shit name.
And, of course, hearing this from Dr. Rock, it was like, hey, we can't ignore this, we have to take action.
So we actually took that very seriously, and I think Richard spent some time thinking about that.
Did remember having a conversation about motorcycles with a guy in the pub we were playing in Palmerston North. He mentioned the Popular Mechanics magazine, and I thought, that's pretty good, Popular Mechanics.
Just made a connection between Popular Mechanics and came back to the band house and said, I've got the new name, it's Pop Mechanics, and we went, that's tremendous. And that was it.
Yeah, we did the 80s thing and reduced it to Pop Mechanics with an X on the end, you know, took liberties with the English language, and that became the name. Unfortunately, you know, it was to have a bad outcome in the end. I didn't know that at the time. But I will take the credit for coming up with the name.
It's your fault.
Yeah, it's my fault. They can blame me. Bummer.
The new name would nearly destroy the band when Pop Mechanics moved to Australia in 1981. But that was in the future. Pop Mechanics were on a golden run in New Zealand in 1980. They toured constantly and recorded their first single in Auckland called Now.
It's quite magic when you look back. You know, it's the sort of opportunity that happens to young people, and it's not till you're older that you realise that that was a fantastic opportunity, and those things happen to you when you're young and you don't actually realise how good they are until you get to middle age and you look back and think, actually, that was a turning point in my life. You know, I left school at 15 and home at 15, and I'd been a drifter from 15 to probably I was 22 when we started the band. I'd never really had a focus on anything to latch onto that I felt good about, and suddenly I was with a group of people that I really believed in, and they were, you know, genuine artists, and I just felt you know, we should just do what we can to make an impact. It wasn't really managed in the early stages, but I became the point of contact for promoters and venue owners, and so I guess in some way I was, you know, the business side of it, but reluctantly.
He was really important to the whole progress that we made. He was very driven, but very organised. He was essentially the manager of the band for the first year plus. A lot of pressure as a front man, and then having to consider all these other things outside of the music.
We weren't making any money in those days. We were pretty much in each other's company 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And, you know, there are many times where you kind of get cabin fever.
I mean, we had fist fights between members of the band. And
over what?
You just drive 10 hours through the night in a van with no heater through the desert road in winter. You know, and you've played a gig the night before and you're driving down to catch the ferry to play a gig in Christchurch, and you know, you've been on the road for only 3 or 4 weeks. It's not a big deal, but you're just sick of the sight of someone and you just snap and suddenly someone's punching someone and like, hang on a minute, what's happening here? You know, you all rely on each other. You can't get away from each other. You depend on each other, and every now and then you just get really tired and you don't want to eat another meat pie. You don't want to sit in the back of the wagon for another 5 hours and you just go, rah! You're at someone's throat, you know. But generally, yeah, it was all kind of healed over pretty quickly.
But not this time. The tension on the road had nowhere to go for Dick Driver, and he suddenly quit Pop Mechanics.
Jumping out a window. Jumping out a window. Jumping out a window. Jumping out a window. Landing in a horror show. Oh, oh.
It was completely out of the blue. We'd been to see Life of Brian, and we'd hop back in the van after Life of Brian, all laughing our asses off because it was a very funny movie. He just said, yeah, guys, I'm leaving the band. And we were like, okay, sure. I mean, he was a man that we took, you know, he's a man to be taken seriously. So I was like, okay, well, all right then.
It was just a sudden rash decision. I just snapped, basically, and somebody needed to just take control of the situation and pull me aside and sit me down, you know, and chill me out.
He just needed to get out. Not necessarily for good, but definitely he needed to get out then and take a breather. And as things turned out, he didn't come back to the band.
It was all a bit of a blur because I was actually quite exhausted and quite unhealthy and should have had a holiday, really. It was just a drag. I had a girlfriend who wanted me to come back and live in Christchurch, which is always a bad thing, you know. And it was the worst decision of my life.
Welcome to the white collar wonderland. 9 to 5 is paradise. There's one thing that you should understand. Once you're
Richard Driver would go on to work in television, first on Radio with Pictures after Karen Hay left, then with his own production company, making programs including music shows Give It a Whirl and Coast on Māori TV.
So we had a bit of a meeting and decided that we'd carry on, but as and how and what, we weren't really sure. We did a few more shows, I think, completed a tour perhaps as a four-piece with Chris, Kevin and myself singing, back to what we were like before he joined, and then decided we did actually need a front man, a focal pointer, you know, the whole bit.
Fortunately for Pop Mechanics, there was a singer in Auckland whom they had already met and liked, and who liked them. Unfortunately, he was already in another band. He was Andrew McLennan, then known as Andrew Snoid.
Oh, I was introduced to him as Andrew Snoid. He was in the Whiz Kids, and they were great.
Andrew, how do you know about Pop Mechanics? How do you know them?
I saw them play their first Auckland gig in Excess Cafe. I just thought, wow, fantastic. They blew me away. I think possibly even the Whiz Kids may have been playing that night as well. I'm really not that sure anymore. Then Dick left, just up and left. I thought, well, yeah, I could go for this.
We were in the band room at one of those places, and he just sort of approached me and said, look, you know, I think that I should be the singer. Something, words to that effect. And I thought about it, I thought, it's probably a good idea. Ran it past the rest of the guys. I think we had some rehearsals with them, and it was just fine. It was a great fit, and we just moved on from there.
I did see it as an opportunity. I really did. I thought, this is definitely a go. I think this band's great. So much to the annoyance of the other Whiz Kid guys, I said, I'm off to be a pop mechanic for a while, lads. And that's how the Blams formed, really. It did split the Whiz Kids asunder, but out of that came the Blams, which I think everybody's probably quite happy about.
The Blams were Blam Blam Blam. Singer Don McGlashan joined the remaining Whiz Kids to record classics like There Is No Depression in New Zealand. Blam 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 would end in a nasty road accident in 1982. No one died, but that's another story. The Pop Mechanics story was to be punctuated with a kind of merry-go-round of singers. First Dick Driver left, then Andrew Snoid would himself leave the band to join the Swingers in Australia.
Andrew and Richard, they were drivers in a lot of way. I mean, you know, that's a bit of a pun on Richard, but they were drivers, you know. We sort of sought out characters like that who are going to, you know, we needed a pointy bit at the front, you know what I mean? We had all this power. We had an incredible amount of, like, musical power, but we did need, like, this, like, wedge just to drive it through. And in both personality and talents, they were like that. They could cut through, you know?
Andrew Snoid's first task with Pop Mechanics was to go into the studio to replace the only vocals that Dick Driver had ever recorded for release with Pop Mechanics.
We'd done Radio Song Now with Mike Chun, with Richard singing, and then he left. It hadn't been released. And it was like, well, that was probably the only problem that we had, because we liked the recordings. We thought they were good, you know, the first things we'd done in proper studio and that, but didn't really want to release it with a different vocalist on there. That just seemed so wrong-footed, so to speak. You know, and I suppose as a show of faith in Andrew, it's like, replace the vocals if you don't mind, which he did.
By now, Pop Mechanics had Mike Chun, the former Slit Ends bass player turned record company magnate, as their manager. He was to prove very useful as the band relocated to Auckland and things started happening.
Mike Chun was very handy when we got to Auckland on a whole number of levels. I mean, one of the things he did was he actually just pulled the band into a unit, got us focused. The other thing was that he knew people, a good engineer, a good studio. You know, without Mike, I'm not even sure that we would have even got out of New Zealand, you know.
Pop music, they never told me that about you. Love sickness, I had no reason there to doubt you. My lifetime is just a slick Wild West show. My music, I wanna hear it on the radio. I wanna hear it on the radio. I wanna hear it, I want to hear it on the radio.
He set us up with some really nice supports, international acts. There was the Motels magazine, two that come to mind, Ice House from Australia, and of course, you know, the whole Sweetwaters thing with the Ends.
Sweetwaters was fantastic. That was something we'd never done before. I think there was like 50,000 people out front of the stage on the night that we played. I guess hats off to Mike Chun for arranging this, but we had a spot in the early evening just before Split Enz. Following Split Enz was Roxy Music, and that spot did great things for us. Tim Finn very kindly opened the Split Enz set with a song called Hard Act to Follow, which he dedicated to us, which was a really nice thing for him to do. Andrew was awesome on stage.
You know, that to me was the best gig ever in my career, bar none. We just got it right that night, and 50,000 people went, "More, please." And I can remember there was a fight between stage managers. Our manager wanted us to do the encore. The stage manager was, you know, looking at his timesheet, and Roxy Music were playing after Split Enz, and Split Enz were on after us, but they graciously let us have an encore.
There'll be a time, you'll see, in the not-too-distant future, when they'll call you up, slap you around some, stick your name on a roster. It'll be like waking
it'll
up.
It'll be like waking up
to your own private funeral. All those cheering, mocking faces sending you to hell.
Pop Mechanics didn't stick around to build on the success of the Sweetwaters Festival. This band was always on the move. They jumped on a plane and took off to Australia to support Split Enz on their Outback tour, dreaming of taking a leap to the next level across the Tasman.
You know, in hindsight, it would have been a better career move to have consolidated upon that success. But in those days, it was very different. I mean, we're going to Australia, and it was like, not a sortie. We're not going for a bit of reconnaissance or to do a few show gigs. We're going there, and you know, well, give us 6 or 7 weeks, and we'll be up there with Cold Chisel and Midnight Oil. Yeah, and we really believed it, and we did very well. We had a brilliant honeymoon in Australia. Toured with the Enz, did a lot of shows with Joe Cocker, Stray Cats. I mean, we had great management, powerful management. CBS signed us. But unfortunately, the whole thing came badly unstuck with a lawsuit over the name.
I'm not ready to die.